I'm Bill Fuller for the Allegheny Front, and I'm here today to talk about chocolate. And with me is Emily Stone.
Hello. Hey. Thanks for having me, Bill.
And why would we ever talk about chocolate? Because it's, look outside.
Right.
There are no cacao plants.
No.
Except at Phipps.
That's right. And I'm not sure if... Actually, I think the one at Phipps does fruit occasionally. But chocolate is a lot like coffee. It does not grow locally. It grows within 20 degrees of the equator in certain conditions and in certain climates. But we eat a lot of it. So what can we do to just be aware of how we can consume chocolate responsibly? And it doesn't mean growing chocolate here. It doesn't necessarily mean moving to the place where we grow chocolate, to say Central America.
Which would be really nice this week.
It would be lovely. I mean, I have lived in Central America. I had a really nice time. It doesn't necessarily mean moving the production to other places. It doesn't necessarily mean producing chocolate differently here, but it means a combination of all of those things. Another thing that it means is, how do we incorporate local ingredients? How do we grow local garden products, local fruits, and make that part of our chocolate consumption? How do we eat less chocolate and incorporate more local products into the chocolate that we eat? Stuff like that.
Eat less chocolate? Yeah. I'm not digging that part of it. You lived in Central America.
I did.
And you smuggled. brought with the full permission of all governments, some chocolate beans.
Tell you a little bit about that process. Over the past couple of summers, I spent some time in Guatemala, and I'm interested in telling the story of Guatemalan chocolate. There's a dominant story, which is that chocolate emerged from this part of the world. The lost history of chocolate is here. The lost cacao trees are here. Let's go and find them and revive this incredible, rich product and incredible, rich industry. And it's a great story. It's a little bit more complicated than that, which is why I wanted to sort of investigate it for myself. So I spent some time in Guatemala. I have some chocolate here, which I got because I went to see a friend of mine named Fernando, who owns a coffee shop in Antigua, Guatemala. It's called Fernando's Cafe. And I said, Fernando, I have this project and I want to find out about chocolate. And he says, well, that's great, because I'm doing some stuff with chocolate too. And he took me with him to visit a farm, which was a couple hours away from where he was. Trees everywhere, and cacao trees grow best when they're intercropped with other fruit. There are avocado trees. There's all kinds of stuff sort of shading. There are hardwood trees growing above the chocolate. So you're in this rich orchard. You have to pick the cacao pods yourself. They don't fall off the tree. They'll just sit there indefinitely. You have to cut them open. You scoop out the pulp. You get a critical...
What does that smell like?
It's like a fruit. It's like this fruity, mushy stuff.
Does it have sort of that tropical fruit aroma, like
yeah.
when you smash a passion fruit or a mango?
A lot like that. The funny thing about, chocolate is a fruit, and people don't think about that a lot. What you eat is the seed of the fruit. And the reason that you can't really transport the fruit is that it's just sort of mushy. You can make a drink out of it, which we did. You mix in some sugar, you take the fruity stuff, you stir it around, and you've got like a sort of a lemonade or a refresco made with the cacao fruit. But in this case, you just sort of scoop out all the fruit. You get a critical mass from, hundreds of cacao pods. You put them in wooden boxes. You let it ferment. In that case, the fruit is fermenting, much like you make wine. And that fermentation changes the chemical composition of the seeds, and it makes them a little bit more palatable. So once they've been fermented, you lay them out to dry, and then you roast them, which is where Fernando comes in. So we truck the beans back to Fernando's place. He roasts them, and then he does all kinds of other stuff with them. What I did was I sort of circumvented part of the process because I wanted to play with them here. And before the roasting, I transported some of the beans with me, a couple pounds, back to the United States. I then sent them to
a twin engine Cessna at night, flying under the radar.
I sent them to Utah. There's a company in Utah called the Amano Chocolate Company. And I asked Art Pollard, who runs that company, if he would make some chocolate out of these beans, which he did. And we tried them, and we can really taste a lot of the fruit in this chocolate. It tastes like cherry. It tastes like apricot.
Let's bust it out. So much fruit in there. So cherry.
Right. And delicious.
Delicious.
But I have to point out that this is not really a feasible form of chocolate production. I don't have time to fly down to Guatemala every time I want a new pound of chocolate. So we've got to think about what goes into moving chocolate around the world.
So there are a lot of micro chocolatiers, coming up now. It's super hot. So by these chocolate manufacturers are showing up all over the country in every different city, is that sort of bringing the process of chocolate to a local place where you can sort of feel local about buying your Pittsburgh processed chocolate?
It can, absolutely, especially if those companies are part of the local community. There are a couple chocolate makers in Missouri. There are several in the Bay Area. We don't have an artisanal chocolate maker in Pittsburgh or in this part of Pennsylvania. But yeah, they exist in several parts of the country. There's a place that I'm going to be talking about more and more called Taza, and they're located in Boston. They're part of that community. They do events for the community. They want to be part of that environment. They're responsible. They want to be ecologically responsible as members of that environment. So even though they truck, or rather ship, cacao beans in from Central America and parts of Africa, when they have to move chocolate around locally, they'll sometimes ride a bike to the post office instead of using a truck, instead of using a car. So yeah, that can be a sort of a meaningful way of being part of the community. There are people in Pennsylvania. There's a company called John and Kira's, which is a chocolatier instead of a chocolate maker, which means they buy processed chocolate from someone else and then they turn that into confections. And they work with community gardens, they work with school gardens, buying local ingredients. So yeah, you can be a responsible food consumer and still use imported chocolate.
Excellent. Excellent. And so this chocolate that we're tasting, you've made a little tart with as well.
Mm-hmm. And so, why don't you taste it and see what you think?
I'm going to check it out. So we have this big kind of like, not loud, but big, full, fruity cherryness. And you got a little chocolate. How'd you make this? A little chocolate moussey thing or a little chocolate ganache?
I made a custard, cream, a little bit of milk, heated that. Added the chocolate, nothing else. No, I mean, there's so much flavor in this. No vanilla. I don't think I added any sugar. A couple of eggs, and then I poured that into a pie crust that I made.
That's delicious. It kind of just softens it all up a little bit. It softens up all that. I mean, it's still the cherry and it's still the chocolate, but it's just sort of softer and rounder. Delicious.
Thanks.
So you should open up a little chocolate manufacturing facility here.
Would you help me out?
I would.
Okay.
I would at least come to taste it, because I love to eat stuff.
Would you purchase something?
I probably would. Because
I'd need to make some.
You need to make some money eventually. Yeah. You don't really. You know, if you can figure out how to tie it into like the academic community, you don't have to make money that way.
That's a good idea. Yeah, I like that idea.
Yeah, tie it into the school. Put it out on the chat farm. Yeah.
Would you help me write the grant proposal?
I would love to help you write the grant proposal.
That sounds terrific.
Yeah.
Okay.
I would help present it too. So you got some more stuff here. You brought two other similar chocolates.
I did. I brought a couple of samples from a company called Cho, which is in the Bay Area.
Spelled T-C-H-O.
T-C-H-O. In San Francisco, there are a ton of chocolate companies in the Bay Area. Scharfenberger started there as a small artisanal company. They still make artisanal chocolate. They're part of the Hershey Company now. So that narrative is, again, really complicated. There are several other chocolate makers. There's a company called Guittard, and I brought a Guittard bar, which we might try. What I brought were these two samples of fruity chocolate. The way that Cho divides up what they do is they isolate the dominant flavors when you taste chocolate. So one is fruity, another is nutty, another is what they call chocolatey, which is that sort of savory, earthy chocolate taste. And they also have a citrus, which is just sort of isolates or sort of spins that fruity in a different direction. So those are some things that you can just pick up in the chocolate yourself, which you have noticed. So what I brought is a fruity kind of chocolate, and I like that a lot. That's sort of my favorite flavor in chocolate. So I brought Cho's two versions of fruity, and I thought we could try them and sort of see how the same kind of taste can take on different elements.
So this
that's one version of the Cho fruity.
This is 1.9C there.
Yeah, they're calling it 1.9C fruity.
There's the fruitiness, but it's not nearly as aggressive as that big cherry in that other chocolate. Really nice kind of up in your nose. It's smoother and mellower, the whole flavor in general.
What's fascinating is that it's like wine. I mean, I think the first time that you try something like this, the response is, I've never tried something like this. It has such an unusual flavor. But as you try more, you realize that that's what people will call a flavor profile, and that's something that occurs again and again in chocolate, but in really subtle different ways, the way that one Sauvignon Blanc tastes different from another Sauvignon Blanc. If you're up for it, you can try chose 1.9D.
1.9D. This is the one I like.
You like 1.9D?
I don't know.
tell him you like it. People at show will be happy.
I do like it. This is... I'm thinking. This is on-air thinking and chewing.
Well, as you're thinking and chewing, I can...
You can talk. I feel like there's a little bit of a blackberry thing on this one. But the first time I taste it, and the second time I taste it now, it sort of changes. I love this sort of thing.
How does it change?
Well, I tasted it a little bit ago after I had a Guatemalan chocolate, which was the big cherry, and the pronounced difference from that was larger than the difference from it now. Because I feel like now the fruit is kind of bigger than it was the first time I tasted it. Now I'm going to go back to the Guatemalan chocolate.
Yeah, go back.
Yeah. Because independent tasting and sequential tasting are two different things. Now coming back to the Guatemalan chocolate, I almost get a creamierness to it. There's still that cherry thing right in the middle of the, like, right here. There's still that cherry sour thing, but I guess there's a little more creaminess to it. Oh, it's so good.
All right, so now that you've done that, I'm going to throw something...
Some...
Absolutely from...
Random.
...outside into the mix. I haven't even tried this. I don't have any expectations.
Why she's handing
Except
me a hot dog, I don't know.
What do you think?
Just isn't there.
It isn't there.
It's not there at all.
Oh. Well, in that case, we're not really going to talk about this chocolate because I had high expectations for this.
It's good, but it's almost a cinnamoniness to it. It totally has a little cinnamon thing.
The weird thing, though, is that there's nothing in this chocolate bar.
But chocolate. Yeah.
Sugar, cacao.
And
so all of those flavors come out of what's in the bean. Now, should we talk more about different kinds of chocolate? Should we talk more about local?
Whatever you want to do.
The
show's supposed to be about food and the environment.
All right, let's talk a little bit more about...
And whatever I feel like talking
let's
about.
Let's talk a little bit more about the environment. But I would be grateful to be guided by... I agree with you that this is not quite there.
It's weird.
Yeah, well, it just tastes like... It just dissolves in the air.
Well, I mean, it was just after three really big flavored...
But I'd say that this is a big... we're not going to talk about it because I like this company and I don't want to... Right, and actually the Cho company has a professional line where they've toned down some of those fruity flavors. And I spoke to a chocolatier who was really grateful for that because that was really nice in the tart, that cherry taste. But that tart had no other ingredients than chocolate. And if you want to make, you know, a chocolate cheesecake or a chocolate and fruit dessert of some kind, if the chocolate just keeps, you know, hitting
boom,
you
boom,
on the
boom,
head
boom,
with these
yeah.
really intense flavors, it's distracting. So, yeah, there's...
And I also think that most people, if we sampled these chocolates to most people, they would prefer the Guittard.
Mm-hmm.
It's okay to say Guittard, because it's balanced, it's mild, it's delicious. But we're testing, okay, a rogue, smuggled... chocolate and two like you know samples of flavor profile chocolates versus a chocolate that's been produced and prepared for mass production. So you know it's like you know it's
all right let's talk about the environment.
Let's talk about so you
what? I was gonna steer.
I think the point is also that you know one of the things that's outside the limits of what we're talking about are those huge amounts of commercially produced chocolate that most people consume and that most people cook with. And so when you're trying to think about local, you know, and you're looking at these kinds of chocolates, right, they're artisanal.
Right.
Which means they're all mathematically more expensive
in
this context.
Right.
But they're used, we think about them and we use them in different ways. And so I think what I've heard you talk about and what I'd like to get you to talk about with Bill a little bit is the way in which... people consume a product on an everyday basis, and they don't think about it, and they don't think about where it came from. You know, Hershey's bars are in CVS, right?
Mm-hmm.
You can buy six of them for, you know, $2 and walk away. And
and the difference between sort of thinking about chocolate as something local.
You bring up a really interesting point, which is that all Hershey bars taste the same. That's the objective of the production.
And they go through great lengths to do that.
Incredible, very, very precise tests and formulae to get Hershey bars tasting the same, in the same way that every single Gap t-shirt looks the same. And that's very convenient if you want to buy a Gap, you want to buy a t-shirt, and you don't really have a lot of time, and you just want to go and get one. You want to buy a candy bar, and you want to just sort of know what it is and retreat into that. I mean, that's a wonderful thing to do. I mean, the politics of doing that are complicated. But the way that these chocolates that I've brought differ is that they have, in fact, the taste of the land. You know where they came from. They taste like these particular trees. They taste like this particular region. They taste like this particular guy's orchard.
Say the word, terroir.
Right.
It's just the word. There's one word in the whole world.
This is terroir. Terroir means tasting the land.
Yeah, it's chocolate terroir.
It comes from the soil. You know what these flavors are, and you can, you know, either you can isolate them and in tasting it recognize the flavor, or else you taste something that makes you aware that this is a singular item. And I think that that reminder is really important. So, no, we can't grow cacao trees here, but we can taste chocolate and know that this is a particular product that comes from a particular place. And knowing that helps us be responsible, helps us be aware consumers. You know, we know what we're tasting. We know where it came from. We have to think about, well, who lives in that place? You know, what are their working conditions? What are their living conditions? What had to happen in order for these beans to get from Guatemala or Costa Rica or the Ivory Coast to here? Something happened. People were involved. A lot of technology was involved. If we recognize that, then we can make a responsible decision. Do we want to buy this chocolate and consume it and enjoy it now? Or do we want to save it for later? Do we want to buy it and incorporate it, you know, with something else? It means that if we're going to buy it, we're contributing to a certain kind of economy, we're contributing to a certain kind of set of social relationships, and so let's work to make those social relationships what we want them to be. Let's work to make those environmental relationships what we want them to be. If we taste chocolate and know that it tastes like Guatemalan chocolate, and know that Guatemala is a particular place, then we'll be more invested in supporting Guatemalan environmental efforts, you know, supporting certain kinds of political endeavors. And that's what we should do. I thought we would try the Enchanted Mushroom Chocolate from Vosges, which is a really fun and weird company.
Powdered
organic
mushroom.
Chocolate infused with reishi mushrooms. Is that how you say it?
Reishi
mushrooms?
I don't know.
And walnuts.
Oh,
you
I go
try
first.
It first because I'm scared. Yeah, it tastes weird. They make one with bacon.
Tastes dirty. Like, do you get the crunch of the, like, the ground mushroom powder in your teeth?
These Vosges chocolates, they're really sexy. Oh, enchanted mushroom. Oh, the Australian variety. But sometimes the best story is the least sexy one. The way that you can eat chocolate responsibly is just to think about, where does the chocolate come from? Use pure ingredients. Think about if you want to call it terroir. Know your grower. Don't add a lot of other weird stuff that you also had to use a lot of fossil fuels to bring in. And just appreciate those inherent tastes. So there are a couple of different approaches. Yeah, you can throw a bunch of stuff in. You can throw local stuff in. You can throw foreign stuff in. Or you can just eat chocolate. Enjoy the flavor. That's all I wanted to say about that.
Excellent. That's a good coda. Here we are drunk on chocolate. Literally. I mean, I'm high on chocolate. And on this great conversation, I could sit here all day and eat chocolate and talk to Emily. But we're going to have to wrap. Emily, okay. Thanks for coming.
Thanks for having me, Bill.
And this is Bill Fuller for Earth's Bounty 2.0 on Allegheny Front.